Peace, y'all.
What's going on tonight? We got somebody special in the house tonight.
Yo, man. We got the heavyweight champion in the building right now?
Yeah, Jay Byard. How you pronounce the last name?
You said it right, my man.
Byard. All right, man.
Byard.
Yo.
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Some big things out here, man. My man got four belts in the house. I'm looking at them right now. Insanity, man. Insanity.
Hey, man, you know, I've been looking forward to this, man, ever since we heard that we was able to interview you, man. So we know this is going to be a good one. And look, man, you know, we just had to go like this.
Yeah, you know, most definitely, you know. How we looking here, Digi?
We got it, man.
We're just here doing the things up. You know, we got the champ here. We're going to do a good, nice interview tonight.
Sir.
With our Canadian heavyweight champion. We're gonna
stand up, Canada.
You know what I mean?
You know,
this is some real business for the people out there to really check on and listen to. You know, play a little couple tunes in here, but I think it's a story time kind of night. We'll play a little something different. You know what I mean?
No doubt.
Yeah, it's a heavy one. And, you're on CJSF
90.1 FM, 1 hour the radio, 6 o'clock blitz. We here every Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Like we said, man, we got the heavyweight champion in the building. Where you hear that at? 1 hour the radio.
Hey,
yo, go ahead.
Don't forget to call in, too.
Yeah, we get to that in a second. I just want to ask a quick question now. Where did you grow up, man? And did you ever think you'd be the heavyweight champion in Canada, man?
That's a great question, man. I grew up all over, you know. I was born in Edmonton, but my roots are Scotian. That's where all my family's from. And so I was raised back and forth across the country, really. And, I came in at a young man, but at 10 years old, I started boxing. And, you know, I started getting bullied in the north end of Halifax when we had first moved back. You know, I was new to the neighborhood. And a lot of the people were actually related to me. They just didn't know me because I was out west for so many years and stuff, so had a hard time adjusting and stuff, being that light-skinned guy with the good hair.
My man got the silver fox.
You light-skinned guys always be saying that, the good hair. Yo.
I'm telling you, that good hair comes with a price, man.
The lady killer, eh? Yo, man.
It was one of those things that, my cousin, actually, my grandfather's first cousin, the late Keith Paris, he was an old pro back in like probably the 60s or something like that. And I remember I was in grade 5 and I got in trouble. I brought a buck knife to school that I had gotten for scouts.
Yeah.
So I got suspended from school and basically my mom was like, no, this can't happen. So I went up to the boxing club with Keith and, he told me to go hit the heavy bag, and the coaches were looking at me and they were talking as I was wilding out on the bag and stuff. And afterwards, the coach comes up to me and he's like, hey, you know, I hear you're having a hard time in the neighborhood and stuff. And I said, yeah. And he said, listen, he said, you know, if you come here every day after school, would you believe me if I told you you're going to be a champion one day? And I looked at him and I honestly didn't believe him, but the fact that there was something to be hopeful for was really what I hung on to, right? So I said, look, like, I can't afford to come here. He's like, listen, he said, I don't care if you got to run here every day after school. He said, if you're getting bullied, if you're getting beat up, if you're getting chased, he said, tell them, run here. And if they want to fight, then put the gloves on in the gym and do it like little men. That's basically what happened, you know. I didn't have the money to pay for the membership dues and stuff like that, and the coach made good, and you know, I started my run into the gym after school every day, and eventually, you know, the bullying and stuff, that stopped, right? So that was really kind of the beginning, and, you know, it wasn't long after that I already had, you know, a clear ambition of wanting to be a champion and seeing that there was, you know, the possibility of being a champion. We had a lot of champions in our boxing club when I came up, so I had a lot of positive examples to look at and to pattern myself after in the gym and stuff like that, right? So, I believed I was going to be a champion. It didn't take me too long. You know, I think 94, I won my first provincial title. And then I won 5 straight provincial titles, 4 straight provincial titles. or sorry, national titles, two heavyweight, two super heavyweight, and then basically won a bronze at the European Championships in 1995, and then basically had a long vacation.
No doubt, we gonna get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
We'll get to that. So as far as like the levels of boxing, right? Could you for the listener right now who may not have the knowledge around boxing, right? Break it down the levels. You know, like where you start from to where you are right now.
Well, there's definitely levels to this stuff. I started off amateur. I actually had a 28-year amateur career because of that vacation that also kind of played into the middle of my amateur career, right? So, from 92 to 98, I competed, took 20 years off almost, and then started competing in 2017, 2018 again. And I had to go back to the amateurs even though I wanted to turn pro. And, in some places there are, there was an old league called Comsport.
Comsport, okay.
It was a semi-pro league.
Okay.
I actually had two fights in there between my amateur and turning pro. But that organization actually was not in alliance with Boxing Canada and also IEBA, which was the International Boxing Association. So basically it was more or less not considered a... You know what I mean? The two fights on my record aren't even on my record, my international amateur passport, right?
So why is that? Why is it not recognized?
Well, because basically they were kind of, I guess the best way to describe it, they were kind of like the rogue. They broke away from Boxing BC and they wanted to do their own thing. But like the legalities and the politics, when you think about insurance and all that kind of stuff, that's where it gets real convoluted, and that's where the pissing contest, I guess, kind of happened, right? And, it's hard to go up against the establishment, especially if you're a small guy, right? I mean, I think they had a lot of good ideas. It's just unfortunate that the timing wasn't right. But a lot of the people, actually, that were involved in that organization, they still ended up, branching back into the regular Boxing BC fighters pool, and guys went and turned pro and stuff like that, and you got lots of guys just aren't doing it anymore too, right? So you got a lot of people that they get introduced to boxing through kind of the fitness kind of modality, right? Boxercise or box fitness, or like kind of HIIT training, right? And then they kind of see, okay, maybe I want to take this a little more seriously, right? And so maybe they start getting into some classes or getting a little bit more into like the actual competitive side of training and stuff, right? And then once they start their amateur journey, their combat career journey, they'll be a novice, right? So the first, I think, 5 or 10 fights, you're considered a novice. So you'd be just doing like 2-minute rounds instead of 3-minute rounds, right?
Yeah.
Once you become an open fighter over the 5 or 10, then you would be looking at like 3-minute rounds, 3 3-minute rounds. Then once you get to international competition, they've messed around with it a lot over the years. Like they've done 2-2s, 3-3s, 4-2s. So I don't really know what it is right now, to be honest, in like Olympic or international competition, because they could change it this year coming up for that particular competition, right? That style of scoring that they just decide they're going to go in another direction for.
How many rounds? Like, are we talking still 12?
No. So 12 rounds is only for like world title fights, right?
World title fights, okay.
Basically, international or like regional titles can be decided at 10 rounds.
Okay.
We're talking about professional here. And then you can have like regional belts, like these Eastern and Western Canadian titles. Those were 8-rounder fights that I fought those for, right? The Canadian title and that UBO Continental title that I won, that was a 10-rounder, right? So fight titles have minimum rounds as well, right?
Okay.
You can't fight for the Canadian title, a legit Canadian title, for less than 10 rounds, right? It has to be 10 rounds.
You gotta have that stamina, boy.
Exactly.
You gotta have that stamina. Because I was thinking about, Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier fight, and if I'm correct, it was about 15 rounds they went.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, that's like, you got to have crazy stamina for that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what happened, though, is that it was the early 90s, if I'm not mistaken, when they did away with the 15 rounds. And once again, it comes down to like CYA, right? Cover your butt. the insurance aspect of things and liability coverage, right? Basically, they deemed that in those 12 to 15, there was too much damage and you know, fatal issues as a result of those combat bouts, right? So they dropped it down to 12. And so now 10 to 12 is the championship rounds, right? And so, you know, essentially, the truth of the matter is in professional boxing, what a lot of people don't understand about why they have 3-minute rounds, that's really the gold standard of what risk is supposed to be measured. So in amateurs, the reason why in novices they have 2-minute rounds is because it's attached to the insurance, right?
Yeah.
In that second to the third minute of combat, that's where 60% of the serious injuries and loss of life occurs in combat in boxing, right?
Wow.
So that's why in large part, you know, the amateur stuff, they can only get the coverage for 2 minutes that makes sense, that's viable, right? That still makes it a solvent business model to put shows on and stuff.
Right? Yo, man, see? My man's dropping science on y'all right now, you know what I mean?
Heavy science, like, you know, just this knowledge that needs to be known, right?
True indeed.
I'm fortunate because my manager's an international matchmaker and sports agent, right? So, like, he's been grooming me and mentoring me and coaching me up on the administrative side of the business of boxing so that when I started to transition and wind down my combat career competing, that I'd start doing the work in the corners of pro fighters and stuff that he's, you know, matching and stuff like that and managing and more or less being the gym guy while he's taking care of the matchmaking side of things, right? So so I'm fortunate that I've gotten a better education on that side of things than most fighters do or may ever will. So it's good because it helps me at least understand the business and it helps me to really just keep the pressure off my manager, right? Because he knows I want to be fighting all the time. And, you know, I've never said no to a contract. So his job's easy. He's just got to save me from myself. And make sure that I'm put in the right fight at the right time. You know, so he's, you know, I'm probably a manager's dream come true because I'm always in the gym. I'm always in shape. All my paperwork's always done when it comes to getting ready for a fight. My licensing stuff is always on point. You know what I mean? And I'm taking no damage in my fights, right?
So,
So were there any boxers who influenced you on your way to where you are?
Yeah, man, there's a lot of them. Actually, Muhammad Ali was probably the guy that influenced me the most. Hands down, like, when I was telling you about that story of that little kid, I was had his coach bent down looking at him and saying, hey, would you believe me if I told you every day if you came here one day you'd be a champion? Well, that vision that I had was that vision of, like, Muhammad Ali holding that belt up. But it was like I couldn't see his face clearly, but it was like that was the silhouette. So, like, when you talk about influence, when I say, like, that was the generational type figure in boxing that I could identify with, right? Like Mike Tyson was, you know what I mean, the baddest man on the planet in 92 when I started boxing. And obviously he was hot, right? But he wasn't a generational type figure yet because he was still in his 20s. Right? And so people, he was scary, he was dangerous, he was what was hot. But Muhammad Ali's body of work as a human being was what made him a generational type fighter because he was more than just a boxer.
True indeed.
I don't know why that was the vision and what I patterned myself after. Maybe it was like my spirit knew about the hard times that I was going to have ahead of me and what it was going to take to actually be in a position where I was out boxing again one day. You know, so Muhammad Ali was probably the most influential figure outside of people that were close to me, like you know, David Defeabon. He was the Canadian heavyweight silver medalist for 1992 or 96's Olympics in Atlanta. And he fought the great Felix Savon, 3-time Olympic gold medalist. David was like a big brother to me, God rest his soul. But he was the last guy to win a you know what I mean, a meaningful medal in boxing for Canada.
Wow.
And
what was that year, 1992?
96. But he also went to the Olympics in 92, actually. He was from Nigeria, and in Barcelona, he fought as a welterweight at 165. And my coaches ended up having him come back somehow, some way with them to Canada. And inside of about 3 months, he was a heavyweight.
Damn.
Got to eating, eh?
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, keep in mind that he was 6'5".
Okay.
Oh, jeez.
Right? Okay. 165. So he had the body to grow into being a legit heavyweight.
Mm.
But, you know, just one of the most genuine guys I ever met. Every time, you know, I came into the gym, he had that heavy Nigerian accent. And, you know, his eyes just lit right up and his face lit up. And he'd just be like, Jay's in the house.
Shout out to Nigeria.
So, you know, David was really one of those guys that really influenced me. I mean, he was our Canadian heavyweight champion for senior, and I was our junior and intermediate Canadian champion, right? So, you know, I was looking at him as the guy that's grooming me to take his place and to carry the torch, right? So, you know, David had a serious impact on me. You know, Roy Jones Jr. was one of those lighter fighters that really had a serious impact on me as well. Mm. More for the flashy stuff. And when you're younger, obviously, you know what I mean? The showboating and that sort of stuff.
That was Roy.
Yeah, and that's the stuff that catches your eye as a young man, right? But honestly, James Toney was more influential. You know, I liked watching Roy because, you know, he just did amazing stuff. But James,
hands down,
he just lights out, man. You just and so if you look at any of my stuff, you know what I mean? Even when I'm just in the gym moving around, like, shout out to James Toney, but I'm telling you, I got better head movement than he.
Yeah, I think I see the interview where you were saying that's the boxer you want to go fight against, right?
You know, mad respect to James because it was him, right? It was his cute inside head movement that I patterned my stuff after.
So I got the
head movement and the elusivity that I have because I was able to watch greats like James Toney, right?
Yo, he went from middleweight to heavyweight too, didn't
he? Exactly, right? Yeah. So, you know, I remember watching those fights when he went to cruiser and when he fought in the heavyweight division and, you know, just... Honestly, you know, for a guy that did himself no service when it came to conditioning, right? Like, he got older and got heavier and fatter every fight. But he was still exciting to watch. And you still had to believe, you know what, it doesn't matter who he's in there. James has a chance to win that fight, man. You know, and if he had been able to stay a little more disciplined with his eating habits and stuff like that, oh, my God, just... We would have been talking about James Toney like we talk about like Sugar Ray Robinson.
Oh, man.
Just is an all-time great.
James Toney was good, man.
Peace to James Toney, man.
Yeah, man.
Yo, so.
So you ever deal with any discrimination on the road to the championship, my brother?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. You know, I think discrimination comes in all kinds of forms, right?
Yes.
And that's what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Discrimination nowadays, it's a lot more subtle. It's like people are so cowardly, they're afraid to even be considered racist or discriminatory, right? So they hide behind little nuances and they do things, right? Like the hateration culture that's out there nowadays, right? Where, you know what I mean? They'll try and pull you back down into the crab bucket because they're down there too and you're trying to shine, right? I see it in all cultures. I see it in all communities. I see it in the West. I see it in the East. It's, you know, it's unfortunate because really it's just, it shows how far that as a people we've gotten away from God, man. Right? The omnipotent creator of all good things, not Satan and his principality down here that he's ruling and reigning supreme on.
It's heavy.
Yeah, man, the racism is, you know, I mean, that's systemic racism.
Discrimination.
Racism. I mean,
discrimination. That's what we were talking about, right?
Well.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Discrimination is like a polite way of kind of sliding in racist, you know,
you guys go.
Ideology and mentality. But, like, the truth is discrimination in boxing happens all the time. I'm age discriminated
all the
time.
No doubt.
Right now, WBC has a tournament for heavyweights, right? And the age limit is 26.
Why is that?
Well, because they're looking for up-and-coming prospects.
Right?
But I'm an up-and-coming prospect, so why are you discriminating on my age because I'm 43 going on 44? Because age is not a mitigating factor. It's actually an advantage. The guy just knocked out for the Canadian title. He was 16 years younger than me. He was an undefeated fighter out of Canelo Alvarez's gym. Ben Alvarez. He was the guy that got him ready for the light heavyweight title fight against Sergey Kovalev.
Oh, wow.
Right? So, like, the reality is that, you know, there's real ones out there, and then there's the rest, right? And the real ones out there, people don't even say our name. I mean, like, when I say don't say my name, I mean people don't say my name. You can scan the internet, look for one person in a calendar year. I have February 3rd, I'll be a Canadian champion and the UBO Continental champion for 1 year. And I've had zero guys on the planet call me out. How can that be? Because aren't you supposed to want to be a champion in boxing?
Somebody don't want one of those four belts we're looking at right now.
No, I know. I literally went on the offensive. I put stuff up of me lighting guys up that I'm trying to get into the ring under contract. Right? I've called them cowards. I've called them you-know-whats online. I've done everything I could to be as disrespectful and ignorant as I could to get the pride in these guys to, like, grow a pair and step it up. Right? And so in boxing, what happens is if people don't really want to fight you, what they'll do is they'll ask for an exorbitant amount of money, right? So there's a couple guys in Canada right now that are asking for, like, more than 10 grand to fight me for, like, not even a 10-round fight, right? With belts on the line, too. So, like, they know the economics of boxing, right? I know it. The casual fan listening right now doesn't, right? But that's soft stuff, right? And, like, when people really want to fight, money don't matter. It ain't about the money. It's about being number one, right? So for me right now, I'm sitting in the Bridgerweight division, which they call heavyweight in Canada.
Okay.
So in Canada, they would call over 223 pounds super heavyweight, right? In the world, they would just call it open heavyweight over 200. So BoxRec is a national or a global database that anybody can go on to, BoxRec.com, punch in the fighter's name, and you can pull up all the information about them, the records, the wins, the losses, the whole nine yards. That database has not recognized the Bridgerweight division yet, which is crap because two of the four major four belt organizations already have, right? So... So I'm actually in a unique position because I was one of the first people in the Bridgerweight division, because I was a small heavyweight, that benefited the most by the actual splitting of the heavyweight division. Because when I started my pro career off, I was fighting guys 6-7 inches taller than me, like 30 pounds heavier than me. And so, you know, in the movies, you can pull it off night in and night out, right? But in the real world, when you're fighting a guy that's 8 inches taller than you and, like, 30 pounds heavier, right? Like, more times than not, you're not going to pull a win out, right? And if that guy's the A side and you're going into his backyard, well, then you got the ref and you got the judges and you got the court of public opinion cheering, right? So you got to knock that guy out that's 20% bigger than you, right? And so for myself, that's really what I decided, you know, to do, is just to take that approach that, like, I'm not going to allow myself to be discriminated against in the ring, because I'm not going to give you the chance to make a decision and rule against me. True, I'm going to destroy that guy in front of me and leave nothing to talk about other than where's the ambulance.
Yeah, you said it on. I seen it on. I don't play with my food.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you see my post fight antics after I'm done starching somebody, you see what happens. Their head just went rolling. You know, here's a walkout song for you. I come out to Spice One's AKAK Loaded. AKAK Loaded with the armrest folded, taking heads off people's shoulders. I don't play with my food.
My man said it, man.
I like that, man.
He said it, man.
I don't play with my food.
Canadian champ in the building right now, man.
Man, you on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Let's go, man.
One Order Radio.
All day, baby.
Calling and talk to the champ, yo.
Yo, what's up? You know, what's some advice you'd give a young boxer coming up in this new era here?
Some advice I would give a new boxer is... know the why you're doing it, right? I think so many people are attracted to boxing because they see that obviously it looks pretty cool. There's an element of, you know, heroism on some level. People are demonstrating courage going in there and fighting. A lot of people, you know, have never had a fight in their life and would never, you never take that kind of a risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think a lot of times, you know, people get into it and then they're deceived about the dangers, right?
Mm.
I think they say there's about 11 people that die in amateur boxing every year globally. You know,
oh, wow.
That's crazy.
But I think it's actually a little bit less than professional boxing, but we've had a string of deaths in the last year. I can think of about 6 deaths alone in professional boxing that have occurred, right?
Mm.
And, you know, there are a variety of reasons that that happens. But, you know, a lot of times these guys, you know, they're not matched properly, or, you know, they didn't have guys in the gym that were actually looking out for them and giving them the proper rest that they needed after having a hard spar and maybe gotten hurt.
Mm.
So, you know, I would say definitely know why you're doing it, and make sure that you pick your teachers wisely.
Mm.
Right? I'd say that's probably the most important piece of feedback that I could give any fighter. You got a lot of options out there.
Mm. You ever have a Don King?
Well, let's put it this way. Don King definitely did a lot for the business of boxing, right? He also exploited the business of boxing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Don King just got slapped with like an over $1 billion lawsuit at the same time he's just getting a lifetime achievement award in the same week. So I just pray for Don King. You know, that guy was about as gangster as it gets.
Mm.
Yo, let's take a little PSA on that one, man.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
One Order Radio.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers establish the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.
CJSF 90.1 FM. This is One Order Radio. We got Jay Byard in the house.
Boom, 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 boom.
You know, Canadian heavyweight champion. We're going to get to the gritty, the dirty.
The nitty gritty.
The nitty, the gritty, the dirty, all of it.
You're guilty, man. You're not letting the people call and you didn't tell them the number yet.
Oh, wow.
Give them the number.
Why don't you give them the number
this
time?
Well, I've been trying.
Well, hit it, baby.
It's 778-782-2573. Talk to your heavyweight Canadian champion, people.
Run that one more time, my brother.
It's 778-782-2573. Call in. We got the Canadian heavyweight champion. He's got stories to tell. You got some questions? Throw them at him.
Yeah, we got some more questions here. You know what I'm saying?
Shoot, man, people just calling. They already calling.
they call in direct. They
no
call
doubt.
Them direct.
No doubt.
We should let them call in for a little minute there, and then we'll do a little more storytelling, and I'm sure they're going to want to call in again.
Yo, Jay Byard, I got a question for you. I remember watching a movie. Was it the 2000s or 90s? Denzel Washington played a boxer that was locked up.
Hurricane.
American prison. And I believe it was some Canadian people that helped him on his journey to get out and back to the heavyweight championship. Can you fill us in on anything about that?
Yeah, funny story, actually. I got a personal connection to that guy. So Reuben Hurricane Carter, for those that don't know, was a welterweight back in the 60s. And he was charged and convicted for a triple murder. I think it was in New Jersey.
Mm.
And it took 20-some years for him to be exonerated and be vindicated for that crime, which he did not commit.
Mm.
Yes, Denzel did play that, play the Hurricane. And actually, funny, that movie got Ruben sued from the guy, the actual world champion that he had fought back in the days, because they had made it seem like Ruben beat the world champion and like he lost the fight, you know what I mean?
Mm.
But they embellished it a little on the movie screen, and I think the guy got like $14 million or something out of the deal. He got paid pretty handsome.
That's better than the fight.
Yeah, way better than the fight.
Go ahead and lie about me, man.
Yeah, so you know, the cool thing about that was like I had actually